The first agenda item, Senate Bill 35, as a work session, will not be heard today. We are doing some more work on that bill. We will have two public hearings and possible work sessions. The first will be Senate. We're going to change the order. Senate Bill 399 will be the first bill that we will hear. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 399.
Public hearing.
I'm going to skip a thing there. So we will start with the public hearing instead of the work session. Okay, public hearing on Senate Bill 399. Senator Johnson, would you like to come up, please?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am accompanied today by a host of individuals that you are going to hear from on this bill. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I am the state senator from District 16. This is really a very small bill, and what it does is to exempt the practice of reflexology from the Oregon Massage Board. What has occurred in the past is the very narrow practice of reflexology has been included in the more encompassing requirements for licensed massage. And I think what you're going to hear later is some pushback from the agency on letting the practice of reflexology escape from them, largely, I think, on turf issues. I don't think that there are human safety issues involved, unlike massage that involves disrobed people and the entire human body. Reflexology is a very narrow practice reserved to the ears and the toes or the feet. And what I bring before you, I think, is a very responsible proposal that has avenues for redress if people are unhappy. There is a mechanism to report inappropriate behavior or dissatisfaction to the Reflexology Association of America or the Reflexology Association of Oregon. This is a very narrow practice. I think this is a chance to allow some entrepreneurial activities to occur around the teaching of reflexology. And so I will bring, I will conclude my remarks with just adding my advocacy for this very narrow, small, rather inconsequential bill to, I think, health and human safety in Oregon, but a bill of huge consequence to the practitioners of the ancient art of reflexology. I'm going to let them speak on their own behalf. You're going to hear from a nurse, a lawyer, very competent people who will make a more credible case than I, but I hope you'll give this bill your very thoughtful consideration.
Just a question. Thank you for your testimony. Is this the kind of practice that would warrant malpractice suits?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to the best of my understanding, no. This is the manipulation of ears and feet. I cannot, in my wildest imaginations, envision a scenario in which there would be the kind of malpractice that one would traditionally think of with medical applications. If I believed that there was danger to the public or a possibility of harm, I would not have brought this bill for your consideration.
Thank you. One of the reason for that is if they are not going to be under any board, the Board of Medical Examiners or the Nurse Practice, the Board of Nursing or any other board, that would be one of the considerations if there was any medical dangers involved.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that there are no medical dangers involved, and I think you will hear from the very competent testimony coming after me that there are numerous portals for the public to register complaints and that it would be dealt with in an appropriate way. But I cannot envision any instance where there could be the possibility of medical harm resulting in medical liability.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Do we have a list? Okay. Margie Spencer, Suzanne Gardner, Dana Knott. Could you come up, please?
Margie Spencer.
Mari Spencer. Okay. The other two individuals. We have room for three people.
Oh, okay.
So if you could all, Suzanne Gardner, Dana Knott.
Diana
Knott. D-I-A-N-A. Okay, Diana. Could you come up and sit?
Diana Knott is not.
Oh, she's not. No. I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm Janice Robertson.
Okay, why don't you come up? Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm Marie Spencer. I'm an intensive care nurse.
I work down the corner around at Salem Hospital. I've been a nurse for 35 years, and I've in the last 10 or 15 years been very interested in the holistic complementary methods of healing, and I've explored many of them. I just have a year class I took with Janice, wonderful class a year ago, and I was really excited to work on my family members and just friends and people that are interested. And I was interested myself since I'm Western trained. I'm going, how can this really work? This is kind of wacky, you know. Then I was doing the history about it. The first time it was ever used was in 2300 BC in an Egyptian tomb. There was a hieroglyph art piece about a pharaoh being worked on. How does this work? And what interested me, I said, when I learned there were 7,000 nerve endings at the bottom of your feet, they're reflex points that you just push in and then bend your thumb just a little bit, and it relaxes and stimulates the whole body, the energetic system of the body, meridian system of the body, electrical system of the body, as you might say, is totally relaxed and opened up to move again. It's like a freeway full of cars that can't move anymore. And because of that, I've worked with people with headaches, relieve the headache within a few seconds to a couple of minutes of massaging of the great toe, the end of the great toe. Anytime you have a headache, just put your foot up, bend your, you know, the great toe, massage it, both of them, and it's gone. Or at least relieved, definitely. And I've also worked with people that have insulin and diabetes, and I work on the reflex point of the pancreas, and usually it's sore. If there's some issue going on, usually it's sore or really painful. People with back issues. And so after I did it a few times, I said, God, this stuff really works. There's really something to this. So I'm really excited to add it to my complementary, to my methods of healing. And I want to start a part-time business. And I have a nursing license. My RN license allows me to touch people. But until this is, you know, separated from a total body massage, which is not what it is. We're talking just, you know, either hands, ears, or the base of your feet, pushing on them, and the reflex points that relate to different body organs, releasing the tension, then the body can turn around and heal itself and be in balance again. Thank you.
Currently, you're under the massage therapy.
I am not currently practicing, sir, because...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not currently really practicing, except I'm friends.
The jurisdiction of the reflexologist is under the jurisdiction of...
You need to have a massage license currently.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself first.
I'm Janice Robertson.
Yeah, move the microphone over, Janice. Yeah. Good, thank you.
I'm Janice Robertson. And I studied reflexology in 1978 in London. Shortly afterwards, I set up my own school in 1982. So I have been a reflexology practitioner for 29 years and have had a school for 25. I was also invited by the London Educational Authority to give reflexology classes to their adult students. When I came to this country 7 years ago, I was shocked to find that there was no reflexology in Oregon, and I soon found out why, because anyone who wanted to practice reflexology had to have a massage license. That meant taking a minimum of a 500-hour massage course, costing anything from $11,000 to $18,000. So nobody was interested in taking another course after that in reflexology. So I set up the Reflexology Association of Oregon, and it was together with Betsy Johnson that we got together on this bill. There are 33 other states that have exempted reflexology from the massage board law. They are free to practice reflexology without any regulation whatsoever, as England, Europe, and the rest of the world. The massage board is concerned about regulation because they have a lot of regulations in their own law. But massage is so different from reflexology. In massage, the person has to strip naked. There are many cases and dangers of sexual promiscuity There is not in reflexology, because people only have to remove their shoes and socks, and that's not very sexually exciting. So we don't need a regulation of that sort. Also, regarding the premises where we practice, all a reflexologist needs is a comfortable armchair for the client to sit back in, or a reclining chair so that the head and neck is supported, a stool for the legs to go on, and a stool to sit on to work on the feet. Therefore, we don't need inspection of premises. If there had been widespread abuse of this freedom throughout America, we would have heard about it. It would certainly have got back to the Reflexology Association of America, and they would have taken action. But I contacted the four biggest insurance companies here, which are IMA, ABMB, Stratus, and Hands-On Trade Protection Plan. They are the ones that insure thousands of massage therapists and reflexologists. So I went to them to ask if they had had any claims for malpractice against a reflexologist, and all four of them said they had never had such a claim. Therefore, it is evident that there has been no abuse of this freedom. If a reflexologist is not competent, if she doesn't give a proper treatment, the person, the client, will be dissatisfied and not go back to her. If that happens continually, she will not have any business. She will have to shut up shop. End of problem. Mm-hmm. All the other states in America require a business license, as for all businesses. So we would get a business license from the city hall. That is what is practiced statewide. The American Massage Therapy Association, which is the nationwide association for massage therapists, some years ago, 4 years ago, they recommended to all the massage boards in all states that reflexology should be exempted from the massage law. So far, 17 states have done that, but Oregon has not. So that is the reason why we have brought this bill to exempt reflexology here from the massage board. The reason for this really is twofold. One is to bring this marvelous therapy, which is a natural therapy which helps the body so much in all its aches and pains. And it's particularly good for elderly people. But secondly, my concern was that in Oregon, there is nothing much for young people to choose from. Young people without higher education have very little to choose from. In the rural areas, they haven't got the money to go on to college in Portland or Salem or wherever. They can't become dental assistants, chiropractors, nurses. But they want to do something in the humanistic line. So all that is open to them is hairdressing, manicure, pedicure, and massage. There are 6,500 massage therapists in Oregon. We have massage therapists coming out of our ears in Astoria. Every other door on Commercial Street is a hairdressing salon. There is a tiny beauty school there called the Astoria Beauty School. It is packed with young people, and they pay up to $18,000 to do a hairdressing course because there's nothing else for them to choose from. So this would be so important for young people to have this therapy to learn, which does not need academic qualifications, but which they would love to do. And there's many girls waiting to do it right now. They want to use their hands. They want to do some kind of humanistic therapy, but they don't want to do body massage. It just doesn't interest them at all. So that is twofold for this bill, to provide people with the benefits of reflexology, which all other countries have, and to provide much more employment and occupation for young people.
Yes. How many reflexologists, thank you, Mr. Chair, how many reflexologists do you think that we have?
Well, we don't know exactly, because I only set up the association about 3 years ago, and so far we have very few members, about 15, because it cannot be practiced freely in Oregon. But I know that there's at least another 10 girls waiting to be able to start practicing.
In the other states that have exempted it, mm-hmm. Then is there a state association for reflexologists?
Yes, there are 27 associations.
And then are there standards through that association that you follow? Or
there are standards set down by the American Reflexology Certification Board. That is the national examining board.
So you take a national exam,
yes,
to become certified?
Well, the schools that teach reflexology can go along with that, those requirements, which are 200 hours, or they can do it less, and you don't get that certification.
Okay.
So the schools vary in their times. But that is the basic regulation we have, and that is what would be followed in Oregon. Okay. That is followed in Washington now.
So Washington State has exempted.
Yes, in 2002 they went to legislation like this, mm-hmm.
And then what entity do they have? Do they have like the Washington State Reflexology Association?
They have a reflexology association. But there's no board regulation.
Yeah. No. Okay. All right. Thank you.
There's no need for a board, because they would just be sitting doing nothing all day. It would just be a lot of red tape and bureaucracy. There's only one state that has a board, and that's North Dakota. And they've got 50 reflexologists who've got to be regulated. But none of the other states have.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Okay, my name is Suzanne Gardner, and I live in Astoria. I learned reflexology a few years ago, and I just think it's a marvelous treatment for so many things. There's just lots and lots of different people that can benefit from reflexology treatments, from young children to the elderly, and I just think putting restrictions on this therapy limits the people that are able to benefit from it. So I'd like to be able to practice reflexology. I have another business in Astoria, but I think I would like to. I've seen it help people that I've worked on, my family and friends, you know, and I know a friend of mine that's a preschool and kindergarten teacher who uses it to calm certain children down, and they love to get on the couch and talk about what's bothering them when my friend is able to manipulate their feet, you know, and it just has a world of benefits, and I'd like to see it more widespread and, you know, have people able to enjoy it.
Okay. Other questions?
Yes. Just for either one of you, if you treat someone, what is usually the cost?
The cost is much, much less than a whole body massage treatment. It depends where you live, of course, but it would be around $35 to $40 for a one-hour treatment, whereas a body massage would be $80 to $90.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Sandra, would you come up, please?
Sandra. Hi, my name is Sandra Aganyaga. I first became interested in reflexology when I was working for Chemeketa Community College on a project through Chemeketa and the Oregon Health Sciences University. And that project was to find employment for individuals who are looking for work in health and human services or in health care. And when I found reflexology, I thought that might be a good option and just doing some research, and then I found out that they actually couldn't go into business and couldn't practice because of the reflexology being in with the massage. And most of them were individuals through vocational rehab, and they didn't have the funds to be able to do a full massage training. And they also needed employment, so they didn't have the time to go through that lengthy of a training. So I have done some training with Janice, and I've read some books, and I've kind of gotten familiar with it and worked with family and friends. My father, who's 80 years old, has had issues and circulation and gout and those kinds of things, and he really enjoyed it so much that he came back a few days later and said, can you do that again? So it really made him feel better. He's 80 years old, and he's still working on a farm and doing all those things himself. And I've also worked with other family and friends, and have had no negative anything from it, only positive
results.
Yes. And I'm working full-time still with Shemakita Community College. In the future, I'd like to do some part-time work in reflexology just because I've seen the benefits and how it can help people. And I'd also eventually hope to retire and then maybe do more work in reflexology so that I can supplement my income. So I'm hoping that this will go through and can pursue it even further. Thank you.
Janice, you and Suzanne, Sandra can step down, please.
Thank you.
Diana Knott?
Linda Rudnick.
Okay.
You have me on the list.
Okay, Patty Glenn.
Okay, I'll step by. Or do you want me to stay?
Well, go ahead and stay.
Okay.
I'll sit over here. No, go ahead, and Linda, just go ahead and testify.
Oh, okay. My name's Linda Rudnick. I'm an attorney in the state of Oregon. I've practiced personal injury medical malpractice for 28 years. I started doing reflexology on family members from self-teaching from book, and I've done it for over 25 years, had very effective results. My father-in-law is 91 years old, retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel. He swears by it, and he's had a lot of benefit from the work I've done with him. I learned that Janice Robertson, who's internationally well known as being one of the best teachers of reflexology, was in our state and was offering courses in Astoria, so I signed up. And I realized that my skill level from being self-taught without any formal education or training was on the lower end of the scale, and it went up somewhat from the training I had with Janice. But I got a lot of effective results just from the self-teaching that I did. I think the real question, we met with Patty Glenn, who's going to testify. She's the executive director of the Board of Massage Therapy. We met in December, and there was a lot of consensus. I've attached in my written materials a copy of the letter I sent to her, which summarizes the consensus there was. And the first point that's important for everyone to understand is even the massage board agrees that they are not the right ones to be oversighting reflexology because the two modalities are entirely different. There's no economics for a person to practice reflexology to go take a $10,000 course of many months that teaches about all the other parts of the body that doesn't involve reflexology. My understanding is in reflexology, in the LMT coursework, reflexology is a day or less of training. And it's wrong regulation. I think those were the words Ms. Glenn used herself when we met. And I think that's one point we can all agree on. The question then becomes, does it need any regulation, any specialized regulation outside of the regulation that businesses have throughout the state of Oregon? I used to work for Mick Gillette when he was the head of consumer protection for the AG's office many, many years ago in the 70s, doing investigations. That agency is well suited to address any consumer-related problems that people who are recipients of reflexology might have, some of which were addressed in the discussion we had with Ms. Glenn. But at the time we met, Ms. Glenn agreed, as did all present, including Senator Johnson, of course, was there at that meeting, that there's no risk of bodily injury to the recipient of reflexology. My experience is, even with being at the low skill level, when I was just book taught, there was never any risk of bodily injury. And Ms. Glenn agreed to that, and that's documented in the letter I sent to her. I see from the written material submitted by a different person, who's the secretary of the board, massage board, they list a variety of contraindications and ideas about how there could be a risk of harm with reflexology. The interesting thing to me is I actively practiced medical malpractice for over 28 years in this state, and never once, and believe me, 98% of the cases that were called into my office were cases that weren't cases. And I heard, I think, just about everything about complaints about some sort of health practitioner, chiropractors, osteopaths, allopaths. Never once was there any complaint about anything to do with reflexology. And from having read the massage board's minutes, I can't see that there's ever been a complaint of anybody doing anything related to reflexology other than practicing the art without having a massage license board. I read back about 10 years of their minutes that are posted on the web. Anyway, so the question, I think, the heart of the question is, does there need to be specialized regulation outside of the massage board? And the reason I advocate that there doesn't is because of the experiences I've had over 20 years of treating my family members and friends without any adverse results and only benefit. And Ms. Robertson already made the point about if there is... You know, people won't go back to people they don't think are benefiting them. People who practice massage charge $90 an hour instead of the $35 an hour, in large part because of all things they have to do for their business, including the education. This is one of the areas where I think Democrats and Republicans can agree that this is one area that doesn't need regulation. And I think the model up in the state of Washington is particularly helpful because they, I think it's been now 3 or 4 years that they've gotten out from under the massage board, had no specialized regulations, and they set up there in their bill, as we have, I believe, in ours, a provision to have people have a place to complain to the state health division, and there's been none. So the fact that in 33 states where there's no regulation at all of reflexologists, no specialized regulation, there's never been any medical malpractice or claim made, liability claim made, for any harm done by reflexologists.
I guess, to me, that raises the question of what happens if somebody sets up a practice that they call reflexology and it doesn't meet your standards. Now, at some point, as your association grows, you have, say, 15 people practicing right now. When you get 300 people practicing, I could see where you would start worrying about fraudulent claims. So I'm wondering if you at some point are going to establish some criteria for your association, course requirements or some specificity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, so we passed the bill. It allows reflexologists to wing it, so to speak. Will there be any rules imposed by the association? And if so, then I think you're going into, that's another kind of thing. So I have.
I do think I understand your question. I think I can answer it.
Yeah.
Let me give it a shot. The whole purpose of having in our bill a opportunity for anyone who has complaints to file them with the health division is so that we can find out if that sort of problem is out there. We don't expect it. You know, I understand what you're saying. Somebody who has done no training whatsoever, doesn't know what side is up, could hang out a shingle and claim to be a reflexologist. Ms. Robertson explained, and I agree with her, they wouldn't get much business because they're not going to be very beneficial. So there's the market influences that affect
But they can do no harm.
That's our position. And I've read this thing from the massage board who talks about there being contraindications for reflexologists not to treat people who have certain conditions. And there is nothing I have ever been exposed to, and I think Ms. Robertson could answer this perhaps better than I, but there's been nothing of any direct consequence to a reflexologist treating a person and having an adverse serious medical condition that I've ever known about. Nor have there been any complaints to the massage board of a reflexologist treating someone with an adverse outcome. So I believe, from my own personal experience, and I probably have done, I'm going to say upwards of, maybe 500 treatments over 30 years of family members and friends. I have had nothing but glowing remarks and gratitude from people for having done this. Because when you understand the basic concepts of reflexology, it's allowing the body to heal itself by balancing energies and removing blockages. So it's not like the other medical professions like the MDs or the osteopaths or the chiropractors who are using interventive things that are invasive, that have risk of harm. So the whole question of whether there's any serious risk of harm from reflexology, I suppose, could be debated. My personal experience is I've never experienced it in the 500 treatments I've given. I don't believe Ms. Robertson has ever experienced it, and I've never heard of it. And, you know, I have to say this, too. I've been a member of the Oregon Trial Lawyers, who I'm sure you guys have heard of before, for the last 30 years. And in working with the other colleagues in my field, I hear about other people's cases. I have never heard of anybody having any reflexology-related claim or even people calling about it, not only in the state of Oregon, but in other states.
Why did you come under the Board of Massage? What prompted that at the very beginning?
You know,
because you were unregulated to start with.
Exactly.
Who forced you? Who required you to become a...
I did the research on that, sir. I went back to look at the legislative history. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure we are under the Board of Massage Therapy. They claim we are. But if you look at the language of the statute, it's so broad, it basically means anybody putting their hands on any part of the body. That's a very broad definition. That was enacted in 1955. And I think it was not even intended to reel in reflexology. But then the massage board decided that it's inclusive of everybody. And they have actually prosecuted people for practicing reflexology who do not have an LMT. And when you understand the difference between the training for LMT and reflexology, we're talking apples and oranges here.
Okay. Questions? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your attention.
Where's Patty Glenn?
I must say this is the first time I've heard about reflexology, although I was in Cannon Beach in a shop, and they had something about reflexology in there, and that's the first time I've seen it.
Well, when you go back to Cannon Beach, you'll...
Hopefully you'll partake of it. Senator Morissette, member of the committee. Patty Glenn, executive director of the Oregon State Board of Massage Therapists and president of the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards. Just here in the capacity to answer some questions, if you have them, about Senate Bill 399, but after hearing testimony today, I feel prudent that we also clarify a few points. The massage board has regulated the definition of massage as it is in statute, as you heard, for quite some time. The board does not regulate modality specifically, but rather anything that falls within the description of massage. So when the questions ask about at what point did the board decide it regulated reflexology, as long as I've been in affiliation with the board as a professional and also now as the executive director, the position has always been that anything that fit within that scope in the definition of massage was regulated regardless of what it was called. I did have the opportunity in December to meet with Ms. Robertson, Senator Johnson, Linda as well, and another woman who is also a massage therapist, and listen to some of their concerns. The Board of Massage back in October 2005 actually began to look at reflexology as well and see if it should be regulated separately.
But a little bit of history. In May of 2005, the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards was formed. And the motivation for forming that organization, much like the Federation of Physical Therapy Boards or the National Council of Nursing or other organizations of that type exist, was to really help to address these issues of this patchwork quilt of regulation that we have across this country in the massage and bodywork field, and to find what that standard should be based on knowledge. And at that point, there had never been any comprehensive survey done of the whole profession. The massage profession, and I think the challenge is that when you hear the word massage, we think of it as being more Swedish massage specific. But when we talk about massage from the regulatory perspective, depending on what state law, it encompasses a vast array of professionals or a very small array of professionals, or in states without regulation, obviously. There is no regulation at this time. So the states came together, and in October of this past year, a national survey or job task analysis of this profession was launched. So at the time that I met with the individuals supporting 399 in December of this year, the survey was out, and there were no results back in yet. And that survey was out and available from October 13th to middle of January of this year. And at the total count, 7,646 professionals from across this country, in fact, every territory except for America, Samoa, and a few international countries participated in that analysis of this profession. We intentionally got it out into the hands of as broad array of folks as we possibly could, and we got some pretty amazing results back. Now, like Linda mentioned, at the time that we met in December, I said clearly, we don't know. We don't know whether reflexology really belongs in this pot with massage. I did not say that I don't believe it does, because personally, from the decade plus that I've been in the profession, I see this whole body work as a group of professionals that could easily be regulated together. The question is, are we regulating it correctly? Do we really have a square peg in a square hole, or are we trying to shove a round peg into that square hole?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It appears to me that reflexology should be an entity under its own, in that the requirements to become a reflexologist is very different. And why force a reflexologist to become a massage therapist? It's its own entity, and whether it stays in the under the board or not, somehow, if it has to stay under the board, it should be carved out as a different certification. I mean, if we have to keep it under the board of massage therapy, but to me, it doesn't make sense at all to have them have to become a massage therapist to do reflexology.
Right. Senator Morissette, Senator Moniz-Anderson, excuse me. So the purpose for kind of laying the foundation of that survey was to let you know that we were as surprised by the end result as state regulators, I think, as probably anybody would be. And I still have a draft result that hasn't been published and will be in the next week. But what we got in that response from those 7,600 individuals was that reflexology is, in fact, the fifth top modality practice across this country. There was 42% of the respondents of 7,600 licensees that responded, or individuals that responded. Overwhelming majority of those support regulation, and overwhelming majority felt like a minimum standard of 500 hours or more would be essential for entry-level licensure into the profession. What we also learned is that we are assessing, maybe not assessing this in the right manner as far as how we're testing entrance to the field. And so what the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards right now is doing currently is developing an entry-level licensing exam to be used across this country that, in fact, adequately represents the diversity of practitioners in our field, much like a medical licensing exam. Medical examiner's exam represents the medical profession, although an oncologist and a podiatrist or an OBGYN and a neurosurgeon practice very different forms of medicine and have a very different advanced knowledge base. What we've learned through this survey is that the core, the foundation of body workers, based on what the professions told us, is the same.
But
and we really do have a unified profession.
But weren't they mainly massage therapists that filled out the survey?
They were massage therapists. There's actually 37 individuals that participated that distinctly said they were primarily reflexologists as well. So I wish that, in the essence of time, I know you're very busy and you have other matters to attend to today, I've been immersed well over my head for the last 18 or 20 months in this process.
and want to assure you that the State Board is committed to making sure that whatever happens moving forward is based on knowledge and integrity and in the best interest of public safety, but assuring that public safety we recognize includes our licensees too, and that unfair and improper regulation of those licensees is not in the best interest. You heard testimony about public harm today. There's a reason that liability insurance in the massage and bodywork field is only $99 a year. Physical harm is not prevalent through any of the bodywork modalities. The harm comes in other ways, whether it's boundary violation, monetary harm, those types of things, and those are the primary cases that we see. But setting that standard and making sure that the individuals practice at that minimal standard is imperative in the regulatory, from the regulatory perspective at both the state and in our state and with the other states that I've talked to. And I hope that you would encourage us to work together to find out how we can most effectively regulate the reflexology folks as well, rather than exempting them. And that was something we did put forward in December, was to, you know, the opportunity to maybe create a title act that was specific to their needs.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, it seems 500 hours is, if you can learn reflexology and a course from Janice Robinson in one day and be extremely effective, it seems 500 hours is extremely exorbitant. And to follow that point, I look at a CNA, and I'm a nurse, so I'm in the nursing profession, and so I look at a CNA, and what the CNA learns, certainly they come under the Board of Nursing, and their requirements and their certification is entirely different. The same for an LPN, and then a nurse, and then a nurse specialist, and then a nurse practitioner. So to require, set up standards for reflexology that would totally negate their, it would basically still require them to become a massage therapist, just doesn't make sense, and no wonder they want to be exempt.
Well, and I think that's back to that piece of what I did say in December, is that we are absolutely willing and would like to work with the reflexologist to see if that needs to be different. So we've got a state issue, and then we have kind of where things are going as we try and even the playing field across this country, and I recognize that your issues are what happens here in the state of Oregon, and certainly as the executive director of our board, our board's issues are what happens here in the state of Oregon. But we are really trying to work towards some commonality across this country so that we can support our folks in the reciprocity portability issues that are challenging the profession right now as well. So.
What advantage would the reflexologists have to be... Okay, let me rephrase that. Assuming that you make them a member at a reduced price and reduced standards and so on, what advantage would they have to be part of your organization?
Well, and I guess membership versus licensure, Senator Morissette, not to correct you there, but I just want to make sure that, you know, it's that entry-level regulatory standard we're talking
about.
Okay,
you're talking the entry-level
right. Licensure,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And
which is 500 hours?
Right now, in the state of Oregon, it's 500 hours.
Well,
vast array.
Okay.
But we're definitely willing to work with groups to address that, and you know, maybe a Title Protection Act. So what would be in their best interest, I guess, or the benefit of that would be that they could hold themselves out as reflexologists, that they would be assured that anyone else holding themselves out as reflexologists would have to adhere to that same standard, whatever that standard was.
And that's what I was getting at in my
right. Previous
question to the previous person, that are they at some point going to feel that they have to set standards as their ranks grow, which I believe they will. But whether or not they set them through your organization or through their own organization is what the question that we're dealing with right now.
Right. And then I guess, you know, voluntary registration versus state regulation, I guess, is really becomes the issue there. Is it something that's mandated or is it something that it's a membership-driven association? And just a point of clarification from earlier testimony, the letter you received was not from our secretary. That was the Oregon Massage Therapy Association, not the State Board of Massage. That you received correspondence from, and we were copied on that correspondence as well. Just, you know, some of the other research I've done, and then I will make it very brief, but this is a National Occupational Standards for Reflexology. It's 162 pages, so I didn't think you needed 25 copies of it today. But we are not the only ones regulating reflexology. I do think that you'll see it change based on the conversations I've had with some very amazing professionals in the reflexology field in this country. I know that the reason that exemption is being put forward in Practice Act language right now is a gentleman's agreement between the main professional association in this country and some of these smaller entities, and that was based really more on emotion than on the knowledge. And that's why we're really trying to gather the knowledge from the profession, so that it's not the regulatory community or the state dictating to them what it should be, but rather the profession defining itself and us find and then us regulating that in a manner that is consistent with how they define themselves. Okay. So thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Montesanto.
I consider this a scope of practice issue. I hate scope of practice issues because it's a turf battle. That is what it absolutely comes down to. And the massage therapists don't want people creeping in on them. The reflexologists don't want to adapt to something like that. So I am proposing a bill that will take care of this scope of practice issue, but that isn't heard until next week, and we have this before us today. But I truly feel that the reflexologists need to have their own entity, their own standards, their own certification. But it's hard for me to have the big, the mammoth picking on the little mouse here,
okay.
And that's how it appears to be right now.
Did you want a response to that, or was
no,
that just a comment?
No, just a comment.
Mr. Chair, one of the things I noticed, 18 states actually require a massage diploma.
That's
to
correct.
Practice reflexology. So you're not thinking in terms of going that far at all.
Well, I think even within the state of Oregon, those 500 hours of that massage license that's currently required, those hours can absolutely be reflexology hours. They don't have to be specific to Swedish massage. They're body work and science-based hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, we haven't had the opportunity to have this conversation on what it would look like. Of the 27 associations that Mr. Robertson was referencing, many of them have minimal standards for entrance into the profession. The United Kingdom is currently addressing the issue of regulation as well and establishing minimum standards there. So there are lots of groups working on this also.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify? I wasn't sure she was going to testify. Go ahead.
My name is Rose Jade. I added my name late. I'm in favor of exempting reflexologists. I'm not a reflexologist. I'm actually a student in a massage program currently at Lane Community College. And as part of my coursework there, we're studying rules and regulations. So here I am to watch how this works. But my position is that, first of all, I agree that 500 hours is a lot of time. I spend it right now, and I'm actually happy with the 500-hour requirement for massage because so much of it is on the body and has to deal with 200 hours have to be science and 300 hours have to be hands-on. I'm shocked to learn that 500 hours could be dedicated to reflexology. I've never heard that stated from any massage program that I've talked to. That is news to me. I would think that if there was a need for reflexology to be regulated by the state, that was something that OLA could handle. It currently handles other types of professions, to my knowledge, that have to do with body, not massage per se, but sports medicine and things like that. And my only other statement would be that I didn't hear Ms. Glenn disclose that she's the president of the Federation of the State Boards, and I think that before you rely on the survey that she talks about, that you should be careful to get a copy of the exact questions that were asked and the answers that were given and the raw data and make your own conclusions about that. And I thank you, Chair Morissette and other chair members, for your time.
Cindy Roberts, would you come up, please? This will be the last one.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the American Massage Therapy Association of Oregon. And I wanted to make a brief statement because this is a little confusing. There is the Oregon Board. No, there's the Oregon Association of Massage Therapists. There's the American Massage Therapist Association of Oregon. And there's the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists. One is regulatory. The other two are professional associations. I represent the larger one, which is about 1,100 members. And I want you to know that we are neutral on this bill. Our national policy is to let them do what they want to do. And eventually, should they have a title act? Perhaps. And for those of you who don't understand title versus practice, practice says only these people can do this. Title says only these people can call themselves this. And so that might be something you want to think about later on. But in the meantime, we are neutral. We think it's fine. And our national policy is to go ahead and let reflexologists come out of the massage therapy statute. And that's what we're happy to do.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, seeing no other wishing to testify, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 399.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 399 to the Senate floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Discussion. Seeing no discussion. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator Montes Anderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye.
Make her carry it.
I accept you.
The measure passes. Senator Johnson will carry the bill. Thank you. Next item, we are going to open a public hearing and a short public hearing and hopefully a work session on Senate Bill 648.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Kathy White. Shirley. Shirley States. A few other familiar faces in the audience.
I know. Oh, no kidding. Yes. I agree with that.
Yes.
Okay. Catherine, or Shirley, did you want to?
Yes, my name is Shirley Stacks, and I am now a caregiver for Lifespan. Mm-hmm. But 2 years ago, my mother passed away. But before that, for 11 years, I was a relative foster caregiver for my mother. And during the last year of her life, I found out about Lifespan, and I got a scholarship from them, a stipend, I guess they call it, yeah, and to help me so that I could get away a little bit, because I had her 24/7, and I didn't have any help from anybody. I tried to get help from my church. I tried to get help other places, but Lifespan was really the only only group that was there for me. And even though I was a paid caregiver, basically my mother and I lived on her pension, because she had enough pension that she paid for the caregiving. But so I didn't have any extra money to pay for someone to stay with her. But because I was relative foster care, the state does not, they help unpaid family caregivers, but they don't help paid ones like myself that was paid so I could stay home with her, but not enough so that I could pay someone else to come in and stay with her. So I got a stipend from Lifespan, and it helped me a lot. That last year was a very difficult year for me, and Lifespan was there for me. So when my mother died, I felt very definitely that I wanted to give back. And so now I'm a caregiver for Lifespan, and it's a really worthwhile organization that helps people that really, really need help. They don't have anywhere else to get it.
Thank you, Shirley. Shirley, were you in Lebanon at our last meeting?
No,
you were not there.
I was unable to be there.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much for being here today and testifying.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon DD Coalition. I've handed you some written testimony from my last presence here at the committee in Lebanon, and there were questions at the last one about cost savings and impacts. And so the other document that I brought, it's a little dense, but it's good reference information in terms of some studies that have been done in terms of cost. And so I just wanted to provide you with that information. I have another document that I will make copies for the record that I didn't have an opportunity to copy that talks a little bit about other cost saving if respite is provided. And one of the examples is Alzheimer's care, and that caregivers for individuals with Alzheimer's, if you can delay institutionalization even for 1 month, there's a savings of approximately nationally $1.1 billion just in 1 month of preventing institutionalizations. MetLife did some research looking at the cost to employers of family members caring for aging parents, family members caring for dependent children or dependent adult children living at home. And the cost was between $11.4 to $29 billion a year just in caregiving costs, where they felt that respite could be a player in providing support. And I know that when the respite program first started, and part of this purpose of this bill is to re-energize the lifespan program and make the adjustments in the organizational structure that would allow us to do that, there were conversations with businesses talking about benefit packages and looking at lifespan or respite care as part of benefit package that employers could provide folks. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions. This bill is really targeted to making clear the responsibilities of the state and the local lifespan programs, changing the allowable area that lifespan funds could be spent on, and creating that structure again for the lifespan programs.
Thank you very much. As far as I know, there is no fiscal, right? You have that. You have word on that, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have word, but we don't have a statement yet.
We don't have that, but we... No.
And there...
The same motion?
Oh, okay, no. The it says refer to Ways and Means, but we do have word from the agency, from DHS.
Yes, Mr. Chair, but we don't...
We don't have it in writing.
In writing.
So what I would propose is we just pass it out if we're so inclined. And if they do come up with a fiscal later, we could write the letter to rescind. But I would rather not write the letter and use up all my rescinds unless we really need them. And I don't think we need it on this. So I would entertain a motion to...
Okay, may I also, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
There are -2 amendments. I want to make sure the committee is
aware
of.
Okay. -2.
The -2 amendments.
Can you read the -2 amendments, please?
Yes, the -2 amendments allow the program to use appropriated funds for costs related to ongoing provider recruitment, allows administrative costs for maintaining the program, including technology to access respite care and improve quality program accountability, also allows the program to use appropriated funds for the purchase of community-based respite care for families and individuals.
Did I get the -2s today or before in 11?
Today. Senator Bridger, there were -1 amendments that were given out in Lebanon, but it turned out that there were some problems with those amendments.
Okay.
And it was redrafted into the -2 amendment.
Okay. Now, Senator
Bridger. Yes, Mr. Chair, I guess it's in the governor's budget.
I mean, it says administrative costs for maintaining the program, so you obviously are already listed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, yes, it is a program within the Department of Human Services that has a budget allocation currently.
Okay.
Yes. And all this does is put a May on how those dollars can be spent. It does not change the amount of dollars that are currently allocated.
The amendment, Mr. Chair, the amendment addresses that the administrative costs can be used for technology acquisition and upgrades. Just inform us as why that's needed, I can assume, but just for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, I think that one of the things that we're looking at is ways to make the whole delivery of respite services more effective, particularly in rural areas. And one of the things we've been looking at is websites that potentially would list providers that an individual could look at and have somebody to call. We're looking at increasing accountability and helping programs keep better track of their providers, their customers, and how dollars and services are provided. So this is just an allowable, it just increases the allowability of how money could be spent.
Thank you.
Correct.
Will there be a fiscal, a non-fiscal statement at some point, or should we rescind?
Well, we got to rescind if it's our, if it's...
Okay, we can go ahead and rescind. In the motion, we can rescind, and we will write the letter to the president explaining why we did that. The fact that...
Mr. Chair, if for some reason it does, the fiscal statement does come back, and there is a fiscal, we can pull it back into committee.
But I think because the SMS does have a subsequent referral, right, and we don't want to send it there, we do have to, in the motion, rescind that subsequent referral.
I think so, too.
To be informed.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so.
Are you ready?
We're ready.
Mr. Chair, I move that.
Did we open a public work session?
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 648.
Okay. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make a statement, and that is that we're so also fortunate sitting here feeling well and able to work and so forth, but we all can face at some time the need for respite care, either in caring for a loved one or in having someone have to care for us. And so the behavioral part of it comes with age many times, with medications with many times, or with disease. And so I think this is a very, very important bill.
And some of us are closer to that age than others, right?
Well, I think the behavioral part comes with serving in this body as well. So I think...
Well, I think it's an awareness that people have to have. Obviously, it can happen to someone of any age. It can happen to a newborn, medically fragile child.
It absolutely can.
I mean, it can happen
it
to parents.
It absolutely can.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. Hearing no disagreement on the amendment, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 648 as amended with the -2 amendment to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and request the President remove the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Discussion? Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Senator Mona Sanderson?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Priest?
Aye.
Chair Morissette?
Aye. Senate Bill 648, as amended, will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill. Thank you very much. And no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Thank you. Thank you.